Oh my gosh, you guys, this episode was an absolute terror to record. For some reason, we had to, like, stop recording, start recording, like, 3 or 4 times. It was like, ugh, it was so annoying. There is one part in which I had to use Brittany's backup. It's about 10 minutes long, and she accidentally had the wrong microphone set up, so there's about 10 minutes in which Brittany doesn't have, like, super great audio quality, but honestly, I'm just thankful that we didn't have, like, chunks in which we didn't have any audio for her at all. So thanks so much for your understanding, and enjoy the episode. But I know that you said, like, can you remind me who else is in this scene?
Well, it's just Betty and Archie. What are you talking about?
Oh, Betty. Her shirt isn't embroidered, so I didn't know what her name was.
Yeah, she's really gonna have to fix that, or we're not gonna know her.
Sorry, that was just really unclear to me. They could work on that by embroidering more of her shirts. Hello and welcome to our Riverdale podcast, brought to you by the Aficionados Podcast Network. My name is Robin Jeffrey. I'm a 28-year-old actor and artist. I like brooding anti-heroes, feminist agendas, and I remember way too many details that no one else cares about. You can follow me personally at Robin E. Jeffrey pretty much everywhere, and our fun fact for this episode is, what sort of thing would you wear to the sock hop? I would probably wear, like, a cute little dress. I don't know what color. I feel like when I was, like, all blonde, my color was, like, maroon, and my sister's color was, like, an army green. And now I feel like army green is, like...
That was also the colors of millennials, though.
Yeah, and now I feel like I look better in an army green now that my hair is brown like hers was. So I don't think I would wear that to the sock hop, but, like, maybe a green, maybe a blue...
I see that for you.
Little dress.
I see that for you.
Okay, thanks.
Are you going to match your socks to it?
Yes.
Excellent, thank you. I wanted to know if they were going to be complimentary or matching.
Oh, yeah. Good question. Whatever I happen to find at the store. I hope that these, like, the dress stores also sell matching socks for each.
I bet they did.
Dress. Yeah.
Which is kind of cute.
Yeah.
Okay. My name is Brittany Ray. I'm a 33-year-old artist and writer. I'm not fixing that. I just stumble sometimes. I like badass moms and long naps. I'm on Twitter @Apritani, where I can be found attempting to be interesting and talking about my cat. I biffed my entire intro. Should I just do it again?
You can if you want to.
You know what? No. This is me.
But also, I think that it's refreshing that we're human, because sometimes I listen to podcasts and I'm like, yeah, I guess, but sometimes it's too professional. Like,
it's really, yeah.
But are you people?
Have you seen the TikToks of those two guys from it's just two dudes who are the dumbest men alive who have a podcast, and they are so funny. There was this one, the one where they were like talking about how his favorite ice cream flavor was Chapman's natural vanilla ice cream.
Yeah.
I love that. That's who they like. They are obviously very funny, but like, that's who I feel we emulate.
I hope so. I think they're like, we're very funny, but they're far funnier than us, but in like stupid way.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
You know, like my favorite thing is when it's like one of them is always wrong, and it depends on, and it's different each time. You know, it's not like that's the stupid one and that's the smart one. Like, they're both stupid.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's what's delightful about it.
Exactly. And I feel like I'm usually the stupid one, but that's okay.
Sometimes I'm stupid.
Sometimes I'm stupid. Sometimes I have a brain.
And it'll be okay. Yeah.
What would I wear to the sock hop? I was never a dress girly, and I still wouldn't be back then. I hate dresses, which I think probably was born of, like, internalized misogyny, but I also don't like my thighs touching.
So fair.
It's not a good texture. So I would definitely be in a pant.
That's why I always have to wear, like, tights or something underneath. Because I completely agree.
Like, if it were at all acceptable to wear a leather jacket and, like, pants to the sock hop, that's what I would be.
Yeah, except Principal Featherhead would be like, boo! He would boo you out of the gym.
All right, bro, I would go and put spikes on his seat.
Yeah.
I don't care. I choose violence. Anyway, that's how you know I'm gay. Anyway, so today we have words to say about episode 702 of Riverdale, Skip, Hop, and Thump. I don't like this title.
Yes, it's weird.
It's very weird.
And our step-by-step notes for this season were written by Sheila Daly, aka our friend Blanche, who you will hear notes from throughout the episode. And we thank you so much, Blanche. As always. Yeah, the title, it doesn't seem to be tied to a piece of media or anything, weirdly, and it seems to, like, date from the early 1700s, and it originally referred to an exercise or game involving hopping, skipping, and jumping, and then since the mid-1800s, it's been used figuratively to mean short distances, so we've all heard a hop, skip, and a jump away, but this episode is not named Hop, Skip, and Jump. It's called Skip, Hop, and Thump, so I don't know.
I think it's meant to be the sounds that this episode makes.
I was thinking, too, where do you think the skip is? Because the hop is obviously the sock hop. And then I think the thump is Ethel falling down at the end.
I love Shannon Person.
I don't know what the skip is.
So much.
Yeah. Oh, what if the skip is Betty playing music on her record player?
Change proof.
Listen, did they put that much thought into it? No. No. But I am.
We're going to. That's our job.
Well, Brittany, would you like to give this episode a toot or a boot?
I'm going to give it a toot. It was classic Riverdale.
Yeah. I would like to take back my statement from last time. I think I was giving last episode a toot because I was just so happy to watch Riverdale.
I mean, yeah.
But I would, I would love to, what's the opposite of preemptive? Post-emptive?
I think the emptive.
Yeah.
Posthumously.
Sure. Close enough. Posthumously.
Sometimes I'm an idiot. Sometimes I know the word posthumously.
The episode last week is dead now, and so posthumously, I would like to give it a newt.
Last week's episode is dead, this episode is your friend now.
And then I will give this episode a toot, because it was like, I enjoyed it so much more. Yeah, this episode, I liked...
See, this is what I'm talking about, I knew
far
it.
Far more than last episode? Yeah, I liked this episode far more than last episode, so I feel like it would be wrong to put them both on toot territory. So, yeah.
I've been doing it.
Yeah, Blanche covered this episode chronologically again. We're going to do the same thing that we did last time, which is that I'm going to say my own thoughts and the notes that Blanche puts in of her opinions. And then Brittany is going to cover Blanche's just step-by-step notes as well as Brittany's opinions.
Our summary.
Yeah. So, all right, let's get started.
All right, here we go, kids. Episode 2 opens with Jughead and Hot Dog hanging out and looking at the new issue of Pep Comics, only to find out that they stole the story he submitted a while ago. He immediately comes to school and complains to his friends, Ethel, Ben Button, who is alive here, and Dilton, who is also alive, but not played by the same actor.
Do I ever have a fun fact for you about Dilton? But okay. Go on, finish your sentence.
Jughead is very upset and decides he's going to the Pep Comics office to confront them about it.
Yes. So Blanche wrote about this scene. She wrote, first of all, Hot Dog is adorable and I always appreciate him being in any scene. Jughead's sweater is also adorable. Anyways, I know this group of Jug's friends seems a lot more loyal to the comics, but I don't love it. Other than Ethel, who only seems to like him because she has a crush on him, they don't seem that supportive of him. Dilton and Ben act like they don't even believe him and kind of just disregard what he's saying. Maybe I'm being overprotective, but I miss the core four. I agree. They're kind of just like really dismissive of him, and it seems like Jughead like isn't even friends with like everybody else, at least in this episode.
I think it's extremely funny that Jughead has two friend groups. He has his and like this is exactly how I was in high school. He has his friends who are popular. So you've got like Cheryl, Veronica, Archie, Betty, you know, that group. And then he also has the freaking nerds.
Yeah.
And since he has a comic book problem, he's like, well, I have to go to my nerd friends to get this looked at.
My normal friends won't talk to me about comics. That's literally me with Dungeons and Dragons. Like, I'm just like, these are my best friends, but like, I gotta go and talk to my D&D friends also.
But the thing that I find really funny about this is like the suspension of disbelief between these two groups. The nerds are like more unaccepting of something that literally happened.
Yeah.
And the popular kids about Jughead losing his mind and saying, we time travel.
Yeah, right, true. I thought it was funny that Blanche was like, I love his Jughead sweater. And I realized that she was talking about the sweater that he's wearing, like, in the scene with Ben and Dilton and Ethel. Because in the first, the first scene where he's sitting with Hot Dog, he was, like, wearing, like, these old-timey, like, those old white footy pajama onesie Rip Van Winkle ass outfit.
Rip Van Winkle ass outfit.
And I thought that was so funny that they put Cole in that. Yeah.
I like, even they know that Cole must be tortured.
Yeah, exactly. And I knew from the trailer, I was like, oh my gosh, that has to be new Dilton. And I felt so smart that I knew it. And we got to see Ben. And so I was looking it up. And fun heckin' fact.
Yeah, what happened to old Dilton?
This is the guy who played Dilton in the pilot. In the pilot, there was a guy, different guy who played Dilton, and then he was recast because of scheduling, and they brought back the original Dilton from the pilot.
Hang on.
Who I pretty sure had, like, no lines at all, but this is him. Isn't that so cool? I love that.
Okay, that's a gag and a half. That's kind of
good. Right? I thought that was so cool.
Especially,
and he's great too.
He's really good. He's a perfect Dilton.
He's really funny.
Like, yeah. I think both Diltons have been really good Diltons, but mm-hmm. yeah, respect. That's really cool.
I think it's perfect because, like, this Dilton feels so much more like comics Dilton, and the original yeah. Dilton, like, that we know and love was, like, very gritty Archie comics Dilton, which is perfect for what he was doing, but, like, this is comics Dilton, and I love him. 50. I love it.
50 Dilton.
Yeah, it's great. And I also love that Jughead says, shucks to that. I think that's great.
I love that.
I saved it as a reaction image.
I'm like, I love, but also am sad that because Jughead doesn't know about the future anymore, we now have to listen to 50's lingo instead of him yeah. accidentally using.
Which was adorable.
2022 lingo.
I do have to say, however, I absolutely love 50s Jughead. I just wish there was somebody else. Like, I have very high hopes for 50s Jughead mm-hmm. for, like, many different things, but I definitely miss somebody knowing what's going on.
Yeah, if someone knew that, like, what the gig was, mm-hmm. I would be like, oh, dope, this is awesome. But because yeah. they've just completely erased the previous 6 seasons.
Yeah.
This is just a new show.
Right.
So we'll see.
It's like, it was really fun for this episode and I was having a great time, but then, like, at the end after it finished, I was just like, wait, but where are my friends?
Yeah, this still isn't, like, the show that I started watching, and, like, yeah. I have a Barchi agenda to, like, mm-hmm. push.
Yeah.
So.
And it's like, I'm having fun right now. I'm having fun, but, like, I don't want to do this for a long term, so we gotta bring somebody back. We gotta bring somebody.
I want Tabitha back so badly. I'm, like, I don't know. I don't participate a lot in the Riverdale fandom, so, because, like, a CW fandom is a dangerous place, yeah. as I'm sure every single person who's listening to this knows. Mm-hmm. I don't know how popular a character Tabitha is, because in my mind, she's the star.
Right, yeah.
Like, everyone loves Tabitha. Tabitha's perfect. We need Tabitha all around all the time. I don't know if that's yeah. a popular opinion, but I know that's my opinion.
It's a popular opinion in, like, the places that I'm hanging out in, but also I don't know if those places represent the greater Riverdale community.
Yeah.
So who knows? But I really want her back so bad.
Same. Okay. I was just gonna bring up Shoni, and then I was like, wait, the next scene is Cheryl, so let's move forward.
Perfect. Yeah.
Cheryl gives the morning announcements and shares that the annual Sock Hop is happening this Friday. She also Ooh. Shares that the band Kevin and the Crooners is performing there, and everyone seems both nervous and excited.
I have to say, like, when I was watching the first time, I thought she said Kevin and the Critters, and I was like, what critters does she have? What does Kevin have? What critters are there?
What in the country bear jamboree?
I was like, is this a Five Nights at Freddy's thing? What's happening? Who are these critters?
Oh my god, I would give anything for Riverdale to become Five Nights at Freddy's.
But I'm also like, who were the other crooners?
That would be way more interesting than being stuck in the past.
It's true, but, like, later Tony's like, this, like, barbershop quartet is what she calls it, and I'm just like, who else was in the crooners? I have no idea.
It's actually, the cast members from Dapper Dans at the Disney parks. They really missed out because the Dapper Dans are fantastic.
Yeah. And, like, Fangs also goes to the school, and we hadn't seen him at all last episode, but he's here now, and he sort of looks at Midge and, like, I don't know, I think he gives her a wink or something, and I'm like, oh my gosh, like, before even watching the rest of the episode, which makes it very clear, but I was just like, oh my gosh, this is like a little Easter egg, because Fangs and Midge had a thing in season 2. It was not an Easter egg, they handed it to me on a platter, but I was very excited about it at the time.
Remember when Midge died at the school play?
Yep.
How far we've come.
Yeah. New Midge, by the way.
In the middle of Alice's Ballad.
Completely new Midge.
Yeah, what's up with new Midge?
Yeah, I looked her up, and she was in one episode of Sabrina, this girl who plays new Midge. No clue. I guess original Midge was busy.
Honestly.
And she's like, I didn't think I'd have to come back to Riverdale because I thought I was dead.
Good for her.
And that's
her.
Probably what happened with Dilton too.
Yep.
That's why I'm confused, is because Dilton was in the 100th episode. Mm-hmm. So, like, that's why I'm like, why couldn't we have brought back Dilton? I don't know, but whatever.
It's called scheduling conflict.
Yeah.
Vancouver actors booked and busy.
So true. We'll take it.
Archie asks Veronica to the Sop Hop. Sop Hop! Ah! Okay, try saying Sop Hop 5 times fast.
Sock Hop, Sock Hop, Sock Hop, Sock Hop, Sock Hop. Oh, okay.
Hey, anyway, you're welcome.
Yeah.
Sorry about that. Archie asked Veronica to the Sock Hop. Veronica, stop! You know what? You didn't even say bless you.
You're right, I didn't. I'm really sorry, and I hope that you have a blessed sneeze.
Thank you so much. Okay. Archie asks Veronica to the sock hop. Ronnie tells him he'll have to prove he can dance first. And I'm like, okay, you know what?
My favorite.
I mean, he doesn't seem like a boy with rhythm.
Yeah, it's true. And he is not. My favorite part about this was when he was just like, Veronica. And then he got up to her and he went, oop, actually, I can't talk now that I'm looking you in the face. Give me 1 second to figure out what I was going to say. And okay, continuing on.
You know what? I too have lost my speech in the face of a pretty girl. When the first time and the only time that I ever met Alex Kingston, I stumbled over every single word because she was too pretty. He's just like me for real. Cheryl and Midge are selling tickets to the dance when Tony and Fangs approach them. Tony shamelessly flirts with an uncomfortable Cheryl. This is bold.
I know.
And then asks her if her friend Fangs can perform there. Midge is like eyes emoji at Fangs, but Cheryl says no because gay Kevin is already performing.
Yeah.
Tony!
That is very out in the open. I would, like, if I was Cheryl, I would be worried that she was just, like, trying to make fun of me. Like, she was doing it to freak me out, not because she actually liked me.
Yeah.
But, who knows?
It cracks me up that everyone around Cheryl can see how gay she is.
Yeah.
Like, it's...
Except for her.
Except for her. She's like...
Or even her, and then she's just like, but no one's supposed to know.
Yeah, she's like, no, I'm in the... this is literally, like, me. I was like, no one knows that I'm gay. Like, I don't want to be gay, so no one thinks that I'm gay.
Yeah.
That's not how that works.
I'm hiding it so good.
I am so closeted right now.
I also noticed, like, on my second rewatch yesterday, I realized, like, Tony isn't even trying to, like, replace Fangs with Kevin.
No.
She just wants Fangs to also play.
Yeah.
So Cheryl being like, no, Kevin's playing is like, okay, and can you spare two songs?
Songs.
And, like, later when she's like, oh, I have to tell Kevin that he's not playing anymore, I'm just like, he can still play. You can just have two headliners. I don't know. Whatever.
I guess, like, having two musical. When I tell you I tried to say two magic acts, I accidentally just reverted back to last season when Reggie and Jughead and Veronica had magic act.
Oh, right. Yes.
Remember when they did magic times. Last season and now we're here?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I miss the good old days.
After this is all over, I have to rewatch the whole show. I'm gonna have the best time.
Like, why do I miss last season so much?
Literally, I feel nostalgia for every single season after it's over. And I'm gonna feel nostalgia for this one later. Like, I really, like, you know.
Well, I usually do, but I loved how stupid last season was.
Yeah.
Like, they were bold in saying, this is the dumbest show you could ever watch. And I was like, you're right, and I'm having a great time.
And thank you. I was so excited to see Midge, but, like, now my main question is, where is Moose? You know, like, if we have to bring back Midge because of how, like, prevalent she is in the comics, like, we have to have Moose. We have to.
And will Moose still be gay?
If we're doing comics. Yeah.
Wait, no, Moose is bi.
If we're doing comics, we have to have Moose. Yes.
Yes.
I'm just like, we have to.
That would be kind of cool, because then Jughead. Kevin would have a love triangle.
Yeah. And also, like, I wonder if they would, like, I don't know, recast Moose to make him look more like the comics, too. I don't know.
I thought Moose looked a lot like the guy from the comics.
I don't even care. Recast him. Whatever. We have to have Moose, though.
Yeah. Over with our friend Jughead. He is waiting to speak to someone at the Peps comic office, which is the exact same set as the Riverdale FBI office.
I noticed, too.
I didn't notice.
You didn't?
He yells at the head writer, Mr. Fieldstone, for rejecting his story and then publishing it without giving him credit. Fieldstone complains that every story is the same and he can't find any good writers anymore. And I'm like, Jughead sent you a story that you liked, so you stole it and published it. It's the same thing. Jug quickly changes gears and tells him that he's a writer. He could work here. Fieldstone gives him a 7-page story to write, and if he likes it, Jughead is hired. And that's how easy it was for white men to do stuff in 1955.
So true. And he's like, really? Because I'm in 11th grade. And he's like, yeah, I don't care.
Literally, this is why it cracks me up when boomers are like, oh, well, did you do this? Did you do this? When it comes to the job market, I'm like, this is how easy it was for y'all. Did you watch the movie The Fabelmans?
No.
So it's like Spielberg, like, pseudo autobiography, and in the end the biggest struggle to break into the business that he has is that no one has answered a few letters that he's written, and then he eventually gets a meeting with, like, one of the most important people in Hollywood and is immediately introduced to all of the most important people he will need to know because he is
young upstart, young white man. And I was like, oh my God! Yeah. Like, he also is Jewish, so, like, there's a struggle there. But, like, boy, it was easy to be a white dude then, and it's easy to be a white dude now.
I love how much, like, comics Jughead has Cody face, which is what I call it when Cole is just fully playing Cody, but saying Jughead's words and dressed as Jughead. Mm-hmm. Because, like, it's when he's, like, very, he, like, over-exaggerates the way that he's speaking, and he, like, does the Disney Channel thing, and in every single episode with Mr. Fieldstone, he has Cody face on, and it just made me so happy, and it also made me think that they probably recorded all of these scenes in the same day.
Oh, they definitely did.
Yeah.
Are you kidding? This show is being made for $2.
Yeah.
Like, you can really tell how limited the budget was this season, especially.
Yeah, fully.
So, Betty and Archie are in Betty's room, where she's trying to teach Archie how to dance. He is not good at the twist, so they try slow dancing. It seems like things are getting a little romantic before they even register how they feel about it. Alice, my beloved cinnamon apple, barges in on them and kicks Archie out.
Yeah. And Blanche also said this is like another parallel to the pilot when Alice walks in on Betty dancing in her cheerleading outfit. Iconic scene.
Oh my God. So Alice was serving the C word, which I cannot say on this podcast. I also really love that in this scene, you can already, like, just the sheer assumption of bringing Archie up to her room tells you so much about how unchanged Betty is.
Mm-hmm.
Because she has always had the sheer audacity.
Yep.
Even in the 1950s.
I like how Archie said that he, like, danced with Midge and broke her toe or whatever, and I was like, ooh, Archie danced with Midge. Who knows when, but cool. But I know that you said, like, can you remind me who else is in this scene?
Well, it's just Betty and Archie. What are you talking about?
Oh, Betty. Her shirt isn't embroidered, so I didn't know what her name was.
Yeah, she's really gonna have to fix that, or we're not gonna know her.
Sorry, that was just really unclear to me. They could work on that by embroidering more of her shirts.
Maybe that'll be, like, Alice's little side project at night. She's just gonna embroider all of Betty's shirts.
I also wanted to say once again that KJ is pure comedy. I love him so much. He's doing such a good job. Good job, buddy.
Yeah, you can really tell KJ's kind of having the time of his life because he knows that this is stupid and might as well, you know?
I wonder if that's what made Archie so annoying in the first three seasons is that KJ was taking it too seriously. And now we can just tell that he's not anymore.
Maybe so.
Maybe so.
Thank you so much, KJ.
Yeah, love you, bud. And I also wanted to say, I bet Julian already knows how to dance. Doesn't need
I'm gonna have practice. Problems all season because lessons. You said I bet Julian already knows how to dance and my brain went the doll
and you thought I said Julian Solomita.
No. Oh. I meant the doll.
Got it.
Julian Solomita knows how to dance.
Yeah, I mean, it's true. Well, who Come knows, but in his own way he does.
Exactly.
I feel like when they're like dancing together and it's getting like eyes emoji romantic, I'm like, that's when they start remembering Jughead saying that they made out on Archie's bed that one time, like in his
oh my God.
Because like the thing is that, like, at what point does everyone else be like, Jughead, you said that we're from the future, and Jughead's like, huh, I don't remember that. Like, when is everybody else gonna bring that up again? And Jughead's not gonna remember, you know? Like, does everybody else forget that he said that also? Like, I don't know.
They probably thought he was doing, like, a bit.
Yeah, probably. And they're like, whatever, that was a funny joke for that one day, Jughead.
Now, that's a crazy thing that you just said, Jughead. Were you doing, like, improv?
I was, like, joking to myself. I was like, Betty, stop having these feelings for Archie. You're dating Kevin.
Why would you ever tell her to stop having
kids? Yeah, right.
Do not interrupt the Barchi agenda.
But you're dating Kevin.
Yeah, but you shouldn't be dating Kevin.
Gay Kevin.
It is not fair for Betty to be Kevin's beard. It's not fair.
It's not fair. She deserves better.
They're each other's beards. Because in my head, Betty's bisexual.
Aww. Yeah.
Which doesn't make a whole lot of sense, but like...
Well, Lily is, so...
See, there you go.
Yeah.
Jughead tells Ethel about his new possible writing gig, and she says that it's her life's goal to draw for Pep Comics. Jughead says he'll give her name to Mr. Fieldstone if she wants. This is how you know Jughead's a good person, because the minute he gets a leg up, he said, you come with me.
Yeah, exactly. He, like, reaches a hand down to help her up, too. I also was just like...
Jughead says, say ally, Valentina.
I was also just like, Ethel, that's your life's goal? Your life's goal to work for Pep Comics. Babe, they're local, man. Like, think big. Your life's goal?
The world was much smaller back then.
I guess that's fair. She's like, I'm a woman and I'd love to just do one thing.
And it's close by. It's close to home. It's a realistic goal.
Oh, yeah. She could be next to, near her parents.
Not for long.
Whoopsie. And I was just like, so in the comics, Ethel has this big old crush on Jughead, and Jughead, like, occasionally entertains it, but, like, is not really interested in her, obviously. And I'm just like, if this actually happens, I'll die, because Jughead is ace. And if they do this, which I honestly feel like they might actually do it.
I don't.
This season. You don't?
No.
Oh, really?
I think they're... Sorry. I mean, I don't think they're gonna do... Wow, the roller coaster I just put you on by accident. I don't don't think they're going to do Ethel and Jughead. I think it's going to be Jughead.
Okay, good. I was like, because even in the trailer...
The highs and lows of high school football!
Because even in the trailer for next episode, even though it's like the sex episode, Jughead's in it once and he kisses Betty once and that's it.
Exactly.
That's all we see of him.
No.
You know, so I honestly, like, my theory is that he's going to, like, kiss Betty and be like, ugh.
Also...
That would make me so happy!
Riverdale writers, listen, I understand that this is, like, what your plan was in the beginning, mm-hmm. but Cole and Lily broke up and it's very clear it wasn't a good breakup. Stop making them kiss each other.
Free them! Free Stop them!
It. Like, have them kiss anyone else!
Yeah. They're just like, here you go, Bugheads, and the Bugheads are like, thanks, and Cole and Lily are like, you're welcome.
I feel bad for the Bugheads.
Yeah.
The show has clearly changed track, and I do feel bad for them.
It sucks when real life enters the fray, and then, even if it doesn't make sense story-wise, because a lot, you know, of course the Bugheads, I'm sure, feel that, like, Bughead was endgame, and, like, if that hadn't happened in real life, that they still would, like, be together and continue to be, like, the it couple of Riverdale. So, like, it sucks that sometimes that, like, comes in and interferes with story.
See, and my perspective was that I think they always intended to explore Barchi with or without Cole and Lily breaking up.
Yeah.
That was what I figured.
I definitely agree that Barchi had to be explored somehow, but I wonder if, like, you know, I'm sure that the Bugheads think that, like, they should come back together after she's done dating Archie, but that's just clearly not gonna happen because of the stuff that happened in real life.
Yeah, I can see that. I see that.
Yeah. Like, I personally don't ship Bughead as much, so, like, I'm happy with the Barchi that we're getting, but I understand if, like, Bughead is, like, your big thing and, like, your white whale, that, like, it would be really disappointing.
Oh, yeah, I completely understand that. I don't mind mm-hmm. Bughead because, like, you gotta love, like, a duo of investigators, you know? It's the Mulder and Scully.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But, it's cute.
Exactly. But, like, I also really like... I like every ship on this show except for Barchi, and it's just because they're so boring. And I said what I said. Cheryl is at Lover's Lane harassing people to buy tickets for the dance, but she soon finds Midge in Fangs' car kissing him. She is absolutely horrified that one of her cheerleaders is dating a serpent, and Midge leaves with her.
My favorite part about this is that she is straight up screaming. Like, with her entire voice, she is shouting into that car.
Yeah. She is like, I will not tolerate any of this. And I'm like, are you just sad that you can't kiss pretty girls?
I also found it was, like, a pretty heckin' steamed up car. I don't know if that's all that they were doing in there, but also, like, I think it's funny that Fangs knew that it was Cheryl out there and rolled down the window anyway.
He was like,
was just like, hey,
I know I'm in trouble for this, so what's up?
Like, here's the thing, did Fangs have any lines other than, like, being up on the stage at the sock hop? Did he say anything else this season? I feel like he didn't. I think he was just there. I think that's funny.
I don't know, and don't quote me on it, but I feel like no.
Okay. Yeah.
Which, like...
I just think it's funny that you didn't say anything.
Sucks, because I actually really like Fangs.
Yeah, me too.
I think it's really fun.
And I like that, like, they continue to reference season 2 here with Midge and Fangs.
Exactly.
Being attracted to each other like they were in season 2.
I really like that, and I actually really did like Tony and Fangs, because I liked the exploration mm-hmm. of, like, a couple where you're both bisexual, and but you're also in, like, what appears to look like a heteronormative relationship, but they're both, like, mm-hmm. very insistent on, like, yeah, we're still queer, and I really liked that. That was a weirdly thoughtful thing that Riverdale did.
Mm-hmm.
Betty and Gay Kevin. I love that so when Blanche does her episode notes, it's always Gay Kevin, and it's very cute.
Yeah.
Betty and
Gay
Kevin are down a couple cars, and things are not going well. You know, I can't imagine why.
Yeah.
He seems very distracted. He hasn't even asked her to the dance yet, but he says it's because he's performing and automatically assumes she'll be in the audience cheering him on. Sure. He also won't kiss her because, as we all know, well, Gay Kevin is gay. Although it doesn't seem like he or anyone else knows that. Betty is understandably frustrated because they've been going out for months and he hasn't made it official yet. He keeps making excuses, so she leaves and says she won't be cheering him on at the dance. Betty being sexually frustrated is so funny.
It's extremely fair of her to be like, "Okay, I'm leaving," though. Especially, like, he's just like, "Whoa, when did you become a sex maniac?" I'm like, she kissed you once!
And it is-
I would not forgive him after this. Like, the fact that she forgives him later, I'm just like, no. After that, I'm like, how dare you? Absolutely not.
And, like, it's not even, like, I mean, I say, like, sex maniac, but she just wants intimacy and to be loved.
Yeah.
And there's nothing wrong with that. She's just barking up the wrong tree.
But he's, like, thinking of excuses to not have to do that stuff with her.
Which, like, by the way, that's, like, a warning sign of how you know you're gay, is if you don't want to mm-hmm. touch your opposite sex partner. Wish someone had mm-hmm. told teenage me that.
Yeah. I also, like, I thought it was funny that she, like, kisses him and she's like, why you don't, like, like kissing me. And he says, I'm performing and I don't want to catch a cold. But he pauses after I'm performing and I'm like, yeah, you are, bud. Yeah. Yes, you are.
And it's not an Oscar winning performance.
Yeah, you're doing just okay. And I'm not sure why people aren't catching on, except for one person in particular. But I also wanted to say that, like, there is a hard zero chemistry between Kevin and Betty, which, like, is the point, obviously. But, like, in my head, they're just friends still. Like, in my head, that's just Kevin and Betty from, like, the regular timeline. It is so hard for me to try and shift focus into them being, like, a couple. And it's just, like, I'm just having a hard time. But I feel like that's kind of the point.
I feel like, especially, it's because Casey Cott has a face that knows what text messaging is.
Yeah, yeah.
You know? And, like, his pattern of speech. I'm like, you are not in the 1950s. You are a man from 2023, and I know this about you.
Yeah, yeah. Blanche said that the way that they were phrasing Kev giving Betty, like, a pin or a jacket was, like, really awkward. She said she didn't know much about, she doesn't know much about 50 slang, so unfortunately she meant something else. And I assume that she meant, like, getting pinned down or something. That's the only thing I can think of.
Oh my god. No, I understood that one immediately.
But it's probably because I've watched a lot of Grease and stuff, like Grease and Back to the Future.
Yeah, and I my brain just doesn't go there first, but that's fair.
Jughead returns to the Pep Comics office with his new story, and Fieldstone hires him. As promised, he recommends Ethel as an artist. They're tasked with illustrating a new zombie story that Jughead wrote.
Yeah, my favorite part about, literally all I have to say about this scene is that I like the part where he's like, yeah, this writing is, like, bad, but whatever, sure, yeah.
I'm like, is it bad? Because,
like, yeah, it's not good.
I'm pretty sure that it's better than anything you've published recently.
Right, fair.
I love the boomer mentality of beating you down to make you work harder. It definitely works.
Right. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Gay Kevin runs into new character Clay Walker in the music room, and there is immediate chemistry. The difference between this and Kevin and Betty is amazing.
Huge. Casey Cott, honestly, shout out. Like, as a straight man, he can really, like, turn it off and turn it on, which is really, really interesting and very good.
I know there's been, like, arguments and debates about, like, people who are opposed, or, you know, people who are straight playing gay characters. I'm fine with it because, one, to demand someone's identity to allow them to play something would unintentionally out someone. And also, sometimes they're just really damn good.
Yeah.
Casey Cott's good.
For sure.
So Clay says that he doesn't have a date to the sock hop and is maybe implying that he wants Kevin to ask him to go.
Yeah. Blanche made a really good point about this. She said, maybe Clay just has better gaydar than me, but I would not be flirting with anyone in the 50s. This scene, along with the Shoney one earlier, just makes me feel nervous for the gay characters. Such a good point. I feel the same way.
That was my concern as well. I was like, these people are... Because, like, last episode, it was, like, no gay people. And, like, even in this episode, it's, you know, can you imagine two women dancing together, blah, 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 blah. And I'm like...
Right, and Cheryl's like, what? No, I wasn't, huh? I wasn't, like, what? No?
And yet these characters are being very openly... like, out.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not sure if it's supposed to be, like, the suspension of disbelief to, like, there's no consequences for this, or if we're gonna see something really homophobic in the future.
Really hurtful. Yeah, really bad.
I suspect it's the second one, because it's Riverdale.
Yeah. I liked the part where Clay was, like, saying that Kevin's dating the prettiest girl in school, and I was like, Betty, you think Betty's the prettiest girl? I think that's wonderful. I think that's really sweet. I love that Betty's the prettiest.
I also think she's the prettiest girl in school.
Yeah, especially with, like,
well, other than the Epcot ball,
people like Veronica and Cheryl there too. Like, it's just I wish that Betty could hear people saying these nice things about her, because I think Betty deserves nice things.
That would be nice. I like that.
Yeah. And I also wanted to say, I think the guy who plays Clay is really good, and that makes me happy that he is, like, good and that it's, like, sort of being taken seriously. And I think I really liked this scene. I thought it was really nice, and they have a lot of chemistry, like we said,
especially because Clay is Kevin's husband in the comics. So, like, this is very, like, this is an end game track for these two, which kind of shocking that it took 7 seasons, but I'm fine with it.
Right, and it is, like, the modern comics too, which is why I feel, like, so optimistic about Ace Jughead, because Jughead said the word asexual and, like, came out in, like, the modern comics, right? So I was like, maybe they're not doing modern comic stuff, but, like, clearly they are, you know, which is, I'm just so excited.
They're definitely doing some stuff, but at the same time, I really don't want to lose Jughead and Tabitha.
Yeah, oh, so true.
So it's hard. But I guess you could be ace and be in a relationship. That was really ignorant of me.
Well, I mean, but also, once we go back to the regular timeline, we'll get everything normal back again. But it's so lovely to see regular, like, actual Ace Jughead in the 50s.
I agree.
Hopefully. Clay says that his dad was in the military, and I was just remembering another one of Kevin's love interests, which was Moose, who I still really want to see. And his dad was also in the military, so I was like, I hope we're not putting Moose and Clay together, because we need to see actual Moose if we're talking about the comics. I'm gonna be a broken record about needing to see Moose.
Yeah, but I'm not gonna hold my breath on account of this season being made for $2.
Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah. Archie approaches Veronica to tell her that he's brushed up on his dancing. Ronnie tells him she's gotten asked by multiple people to the dance and pretty much says that Archie has to prove himself worthy of taking her. She invites him to the Pembroke tonight to do so. Ronnie!
Yeah.
Oh my god.
I was just like Archie, where like she wanted to invite him and I thought like, oh, it's just like a little date, which is like nice and fine and cool. And then, but when we get there, I am not happy. I am just like Mary, I am pissed.
Yeah. Mary's reaction to this, I was like, thank you so much, Molly Ringwald. Mm-hmm. I know you don't have to be here, but I treasure you being here.
Yeah. I think so there's this book that Veronica is reading. I looked up, and she must have an advanced copy of this book because it comes out in 1956 and it's apparently 1955, but
That's funny.
I wouldn't put it past her to have an advanced copy of a book. Peyton Place is a 1956 novel by the American author Grace Metalius, set in New England in the time periods before and after World War II. The novel tells the story of three women who are forced to come to terms with their identity, both as women and as sexual beings, so sort of about next episode, in a small, conservative, gossipy town. Metalius included recurring themes of hypocrisy, social inequities, and class privilege in a tale that also includes incest, abortion, adultery, lust, and murder. The novel sold 60,000 copies within the first 10 days of its release, and it remains on the New York Times bestseller list for 59 weeks.
I can't believe that book was published in the 50s.
No kidding.
Holy crap.
Yeah.
That's,
but it also...
a bold thing for Ronnie to be reading.
I totally see Veronica reading that.
Oh, 100%. You know she loves something salacious, but I also think it might be educational.
Yeah.
Interesting. Betty overhears this, and she timidly tells Ronnie how thoroughly impressed with how confident she is, and then complains that she and gay Kevin are going through a rough patch. Veronica suggests that she ask someone else to the dance to get him jealous.
Yeah. Happy to see Betty wearing her embroidered shirt, wearing them to school, I guess.
Yeah, we know her name again.
And, Blanche also thought that it was cute that she has her name embroidered, and she totally agrees with you from last episode that Alice totally sews them in for her. And like me, as a person who does embroidery, I'm just like, should I start embroidering my shirts? It's kind of cute, actually.
People who embroider their stuff on TikTok, like, it's so creative and you need to be doing this.
I know, it's just really hard because, like, it's fun with, like, the canvas that I'm doing. It's like, then the canvas is out of the way because I cut it. But, like, with your clothes and, like, I did a pillowcase recently. It's hard because the fabric is not in the shape for that.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, I'm definitely interested in trying some more. I have, like, quite a few orders right now, though, so I'm a little bit busy.
Oh, flex on them, flex on them. Cheryl stops Dilton. Oh, by the way, oh, I just want to say, Veronica. Right.
I know. I was like, you guys should just go.
Every single combination of women in this show, mm-hmm. I'm like, but what if you guys just kissed?
Yeah.
Except for, I guess, Betty and Cheryl because they're cousins.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like they still did that at some point.
They did, but they were not cousins because they were like from the past.
Right.
And she was a Smith and or whatever.
Got it. Cheryl stops Dilton.
But they said, yeah, we'll make it happen for you. Here you go.
Yeah. And I was like, you know what? Thank you.
Anything you
Thank
want.
Thank you for letting Lily Reinhart kiss girls.
Yeah.
Especially because like Lily and Madeline and Cammy are all really good friends.
Yeah.
So I love this for them.
Yeah.
Cheryl stops Dilton in the hallway and demands to know why he and so many other people aren't buying tickets to the dance. Yeah, your priority for dance clout is Dilton.
Yeah, right.
Sure. Dilton says that the Serpents are planning to throw rotten eggs at the sock hop guests in the parking lot and that he heard from that scary Tony girl that Cheryl is not pleased.
I love that. I love the scary Tony girl line. I also thought it was so funny that they were so desperate to sell tickets that they were BOGO now, that they're buy one, get one free.
Right?
That's how much. Yeah. Ugh, I love that.
I'm like, how much do sock hops cost to put on?
I love you, new Dilton. You're great. New old Dilton.
Did the musical act get paid? New old Dilton. The Adventures of New Old Dilton.
Probably not. They probably are just playing for clout at this point.
I would also play for clout.
Yeah.
I think everyone should know how good I am.
Mary offers Archie help finding a suit after he comes into the kitchen wearing one about 4 sizes too small. She pulls out Fred's old suit from storage for him, and it fits perfectly. Archie tells her that he has to wear something to Ronnie's tonight to audition as her date, which Mary obviously doesn't think too highly of, but Archie defends her. I'm on Team Mary on this one.
Yeah, me too.
When he turns around, Mary gets a little teary-eyed thinking of Fred, and to be fair, I did too,
that was Blanche, and girl same. She tells Archie about their own high school days and how he used to write poems for her, which really intrigues Archie. It's just like little songs.
It's really sweet. And my only note for this scene was when he turns around and sees her tearing up and he just goes, ah, geez, mom.
I know, isn't it sweet?
Ah, geez, mom.
They're so sweet together. I love these two actors getting to, like, have more scenes together than usual.
Yeah. Yeah. And Blanche wrote, I think this is my favorite scene in the episode. I was always under the impression that Mary and Gladys, because, you know, guys know that Blanche is obsessed with Gladys, were older than the rest of the parents and therefore didn't go to high school with them. But I guess new era, new rules. I also have to wonder if Fred ever made it past poetry and wrote music like he did back in our Riverdale, and if Archie will do the same this season. I hope he does. I hope that Archie writes some songs. I would love that.
I hope he does too. I think that would be very sweet.
Yeah.
Archie has taken a page out of his dad's book and wrote a poem for Veronica. He comes next door to ask Betty to read it first, and she says that he has a poet's soul.
And she, of course, is, like, fully charmed by this poem because they're engaged in another timeline, you know?
They're engaged, and may I say it, they are endgame.
Yeah.
I will collect my endgame.
Just like they said in the pilot episode, they told us.
They did, and people did not listen.
Yeah.
But they said it.
Gay Kevin said so.
Cheryl arrives at the dark room underneath Pops, which we obviously know is Le Bon Nuit and the new white worm. It's because they said we have this set, so we just got to use it over and over and over again.
Yep.
It's a coffee house that also serves as the Serpent's hangout spot. Cheryl confronts Tony about trying to ruin the dance, and Tony once again asks her to let Fangs play. He's actually performing here in a few minutes, so she invites Cheryl to stay chat and listen to his performance.
Yeah, I just think it's funny, and like I said, I wonder if they even, like, remember the things that Jughead said to them last episode, but, like, when he's, like, a biker bar underneath Pops or whatever, and they're just like, what? You know, like there's already something underneath Pops, you know? That's literally what Jughead was talking about.
Well, if I were them, I think he was just borrowing elements from reality.
Yeah, that's probably what they were thinking. But also, Blanche said that she wishes that they had this in the early seasons for the teen serpents. She said, I adore the original white worm, but it always felt odd having the teenage members of the gang hang out there, which is definitely fair.
Exactly. Yeah, I also felt weird about that. Yeah. Betty, I will never for the rest of my life will I ever forget that this show had a teenager do the serpent dance in a bar. That was
Listen,
wrong.
Do I love that episode? Yes, because important things happened for my ship. But was that episode also heckin' weird? Yeah, absolutely.
Listen, we are just simple Parentdale stans, okay? We can't be held responsible for the episodes that we like.
Mm-hmm.
We're innocent.
Yeah.
Archie arrives at the Pembroke. He's brought Veronica flowers and his poem, but when Veronica greets him, he finds out she's entertaining a bunch of other boys, Julian included. Ronnie, this was just bad behavior.
Yeah.
It was just really disrespectful.
It made me really sad. Yeah, for sure. And I also thought, like, my favorite part of it was, like, Archie, like, turning around in the elevator because I guess it, like, opened on the other side that he thought it was going to, which I thought was really cute. But, like, this is humiliating, I think. Like, I genuinely, like, if I had shown up to there, I'd be like, okay. And, like, I feel like Julian should be embarrassed, too. I would be so embarrassed to be there.
I feel like this is another one of those things where, like, rich people slash the culture that she was raised in, like the Hollywood culture, they're like, oh yeah, this is totally normal behavior. And all other people are like, hey, that's a little strange.
Yeah. Blanche made the incredible note that this is where Reggie should have shown up. Yeah. And you are so right. That would have been the best reveal ever. I wish.
Completely agreed. Completely agreed. Where is our boy?
Where is he?
He's awful and he's ours. Betty talks to Alice about her rising feelings for Archie. Alice does not seem happy about it and suggests it's probably just because gay Kevin is being a bad boyfriend to her. What's wrong with dating Archie?
I don't know. She clearly has something against Archie. I have a theory about this later when Alice and Kevin have their scene. But, like, how harsh is... I mean, you know, we're going back to season one Alice and stuff. Like, we all expected this. But, like, she's so harsh. She's like, maybe you're feeling these because you feel sad about being rejected.
And I'm like...
And, like, that made me so sad because it was, like, so sweet of Betty to be so, like, honest about this to her mom.
Yeah.
Like, she didn't go to her friend, to any of her friends. She went to her mom about this for, like, advice or whatever. And she was just, like, so mean about it. And it made me so sad.
My suspicion is that everything that's happening to Betty reminds Alice really strongly of, like, how she felt when she was a teenager. And the fact that Alice settled for Hal might have something to do with it.
Oh, you think she's, like, pushing... Like, I feel like it's interesting. Some moms are like, I want my daughter to have more than I ever had. And then, like, some moms, like Alice, are like, I don't want you to have anything that's better than what I had. You know? Like, she's just like, yeah, go ahead.
I think it's it's less that and more that that's the only normal that Alice knows.
Mm.
So she thinks that the way Betty's feeling is her fault, and like that's just how girls feel at that age, and right. It's totally normal.
So she might not even be trying to do anything malicious, you don't think?
I mean, maybe, but that also just might be because I find Meech and Amick extremely attractive, and I'm willing to forgive a lot of things.
I know.
So
hey, we're all human, like I said.
Thank you.
This is about the midway point in the episode. So I'm going to really quickly talk to you guys about Patreon. It's a service in which you can donate to some of your favorite creators. Our Patreon is patreon.com/theafficionados. You can find the link in the description. And we have some pretty cool stuff. The $1 a month level is early access to every single podcast. And a lot of people think that it's really worth it, especially for weekly shows like this one. And I also have made it so that you can have a 1 month free trial to that tier as well. So if you'd like to have early access for 1 month for free, and then if you like it so much, you can maybe join for realsies. That would be great. The $2 level is our Discord server, in which I post the links to the episodes literally as soon as they're done. So sometimes the Discord gets it even earlier than regular early access. $5 is 10% off at 3 different small businesses. And $10 is our Patreon-only podcast, which we put out every 2 weeks, and we have so much fun doing. And yeah, we'd really appreciate your help. If not, just recommend us to a friend, because that's free, and yeah, it would just still be really helpful.
Our last Patreon-only podcast went off the rails in the funniest way.
It's true.
We lost our minds.
Yeah. Always.
All right. Jughead is over at Ethel's looking at her illustration for their comic. He's super impressed. Ethel asks him to the dance, and Jughead, who's genuinely clueless, agrees, mm-hmm. but thinks that it's just for kicks. Before they can discuss it further, Ethel's mom comes in and is horrified she has a boy in her room, so she kicks Jughead out.
I love this scene so much. Like, if there's any, like, I brought back my segment Asexual Jughead ? From the first like few seasons of this show, and I am so thrilled to be like, there is not only just not something that like contradicts asexual Jughead, but like there is ample evidence.
Yeah.
And I'm just so thrilled, and I think he is so funny and so cute, and I love him so much. And I love the part where she's like, do you want to go to the dance for, and he, like, for funsies, and then he goes, yes, but because there might be cookies and whatnot.
What a Jughead answer.
Because there might be cookies, and that's why I want to go. Not to dance or anything. I just want to see what food they have. He's the best.
I also really like that they've decided to round Ethel out a little. Mm-hmm. Instead of just mm-hmm. being like this obsessive crazy girl, she's this talented artist, which like you could see roots of even in the Gargoyle King episodes where yeah. she was insane. But hey, she was creative.
When she made that vision board. Yeah.
That's exactly what I was thinking about.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I like this like rewrite of her personality. It feels a lot less misogynist.
Yeah, I see that too. I think that Ethel is like more likable in these episodes than, I mean, it's only this one episode, but like more likable than I've found her in like the whole rest of the series.
Yeah, for sure.
But I also am just like, we are not doing Ethel and Jughead. Ethel, please go fixate on Ben again, please. Go do something else.
Right.
He was like, she's like, Ben's my boyfriend, but now he's dead, or like whatever happened. I don't remember. But I also love when Jughead, Ethel's mom is like, get out, boy, in my daughter's room. And Jughead's like, don't worry, Ethel's mom. I am not interested in your daughter. We're good. I'll just go. That's fine. I do not care.
Also, Ethel's parents suck.
Yeah, it's rough. Blanche also said about this scene that in 2003, the Sprouse twins starred in a really bad straight-to-DVD movie about soccer called Just for Kicks. She says, I know this line obviously wasn't referencing that, but I think we should all humble Cole by pointing it out.
Let's do it.
But I also kind of feel like it might have been. I haven't seen the movie. I need to now. But what if it was a reference to that?
I mean, I feel like that's giving the writers a lot more credit than they deserve, but
yeah.
I'm also going to accept that.
I also think that would be really funny. And Blanche also says she really misses Tabitha, and God, do I ever agree. I agree so much. I miss her.
I want my girl back. Archie's visibly uncomfortable at Veronica's quote-unquote event. He's mm-hmm. trying to stay civil and quiet, but Julian starts insulting his suit and his father. Julian has no manners.
So true.
Veronica breaks it up, and Archie heads out. Okay. Here's the thing.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Go on.
Julian was raised in a household of, like, extreme wealth.
Yes.
And if it was wealth that had morals, he would not behave in this manner.
Right.
But clearly, that boy did not learn any manners at all.
Yeah. I literally, like, one of my notes is like, hey, Julian, like, being a piece of crap is, like, not hot. I don't know why you seem to think that, like, being mean to this guy is gonna, like, make Veronica like you more, because clearly, if you think that, you don't know Veronica.
Right?
Half as well as you think you do. Like, you, like, maybe that works for some girls, but not Veronica, so clearly you don't know her.
Well, I mean, isn't it just like a rich white man to just assume that everything he does is attractive?
Right. Yeah.
But like, oh my god, what a prick.
Yeah, for sure. And also he's just like, he calls Archie a sponge as an insult. Is that an insult? I think it's just calling him a different noun.
Sponge kind of invokes leech. So he is riding Ronnie's coattails because she is wealthy. Yeah. It's like a 50s slang.
I see. Uh-huh. Yeah, the only way that I could think about it was that he was a sponge, so he was, like, soaking up. So, like, he wasn't doing anything in the scene. He was just, like, listening and soaking up what other people were doing. And I was like, you're telling me that being observant is an insult? But your thing makes way more sense.
Yeah, he's just calling him a gold digger.
Yeah, and, like, we don't... But, and also, who are even these other dudes? Like...
Good point.
They don't even get any lines. They mean nothing to me. I guess they just wanted to show, like, how popular Veronica is rather than just having Archie and Julian there.
Oh, I guess that makes sense then.
Yeah. Also, I think that, like, Archie, like, drank out of the glass and there was sort of, like, an ice clinking sound that they must have added in post, because when he put the glass down, it sounded like a plastic glass.
Oops.
Oopsie. Veronica also says that she likes variety in her men's clothes and variety in her men. And I'm like, okay, well, I guess you gotta find somebody who doesn't have red hair, because that's all you got right now, mostly.
Right? She's like, I like variety in my men, and I'm like, really? Because
You're just in a love triangle of the...
They all look the same.
Yeah. And when Archie left, I was like, oh no, well, guess you gotta go with Betty.
Exactly.
Oh well.
Oh, sucks to suck. Guess you should go be with your soulmate. Thank you.
Yeah. One of my favorite parts about this, like, whole episode was this, like, rock and roll cover of, like, the main Riverdale theme that happens over top of him leaving. It's dope. It was really cool.
The music direction in this season is, as usual, quite good.
Quite good.
Ronnie shows up at Archie's house the next morning, but Mary answers the door, saying he's not home. She's clearly upset with Veronica, who says that she feels bad about it. Mary says Archie blames himself and Julian, but it's clear to her that Veronica is to blame and her little audition was messed up.
Mm-hmm.
Ronnie half jokes, half defends herself, and Mary shuts the door in her face. Team Mary.
Yep, so true. And Blanche even said, get her ass, Mary. She said, this plot was so weird and gross to me. Pretty privilege at its finest. I completely agree.
Correct.
Yeah, and, like, I thought it was funny that, like, she left and she was like, his mommy got mad at me. But you deserved it.
Like, what did you think was gonna happen? You made that poor boy feel like absolute crap.
The part that made me laugh so much is that, like, Mary was like, oh, he's at the grocery store. And she's like, what? He's shopping this early? And I was like, can't be that early if you're showing up at people's houses before school.
And also, middle class people and lower middle class people have to do those things at convenient times, mm-hmm. Veronica.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Alice has Gay Kevin over to talk about him and Betty. He explains that Betty expects things from him and he's not sure he can give it to her. Alice says she understands and gives him the pin that Hal gave to her in high school so that he can give it to Betty. She says that it will take care of everything because it took care of a desire they were both feeling, I guess?
Or something? First of all, I was like, Kevin can't buy his own pin? Lazy ass Kevin.
I'm like, Kevin, I know a shop where you can buy pins.
Yeah, great. Yeah, imagine. It's like, here you go, Betty. It's this Star Trek pin that I bought from visitbinnyland.com.
You're welcome.
I'm like, also the pin is, like, cursed by Hal now, so it's definitely not gonna work, even though we knew it wasn't going to anyway.
Yeah, that pin is definitely bad luck.
Yeah. My theory about this was that I wonder if Alice wants Betty to date Kevin because she knows that Kevin is gay and then he won't, like, do stuff with Betty. Like, she wants Betty to stay pure.
Oh.
And so she's like, if she's dating Kevin, then she'll stay pure because she's not gonna do that stuff. Because Kevin won't do that stuff.
Honestly, I would believe that.
Because, I mean, that's what she's saying, right? She's just like, no, because she won't, like, try to do stuff with you if she has this pin, because then she'll, like, feel reassured that eventually it will happen and she won't try and, like, rush it or whatever. I feel like that's what Alice is doing. That's what I think.
I'm gonna say yes to that.
And Blanche also said that she found it really hard to summarize this scene because what the hell is Alice going on about? And I completely agree.
Yeah.
Like, I'm like, what is she even saying?
It's a really weird scene. The motivations are not clear. I don't know.
Yeah.
It's Riverdale.
And Blanche also said that maybe Hal's desire is like his desire to kill.
Oh, that would make a lot of sense.
I was like, that'd be a good one.
Because like, I know she's...
If Alice knows about it.
Like, I know she's trying to imply it's about sex and like... But, like,
yeah,
Alice was the horny one in high school, not Hal. Like, Alice got pregnant with FP's baby in high school.
If Charles doesn't exist in this timeline, I will literally riot. Like, that has to still be canon or else I will find... Listen, I will find whoever writes him out and I will put dog poop under their pillow.
Seems dire.
I have dog poop. I can do it.
Thank you so much for letting me know that you have a supply. I was worried. I was like, where's she gonna get it from?
I do. They're all out in my yard over there.
Great. Disgusting. Thank you so much. Tony and Cheryl are now both selling tickets to the sock hop. Cheryl's agreed to let Fangs play. Tony forces Dilton to buy 5 tickets and then gives Cheryl hard eyes. The chemistry is unreal.
I love new Dilton so much, but I'm also like, what is he gonna do with all those tickets? Like, maybe gives Jughead and Ethel too so that they don't have to buy theirs. I don't know.
Oh, that might work.
Yeah. But yeah, I agree. Tony and Cheryl are really cute.
Loving that Tony has just shoved her way into Cheryl's life. I appreciate the effort.
Yeah, I do think it's interesting that Cheryl, like, immediately changes her tune, though. Like, she's still not, like, kind of uncomfortable about it, you know? Like, this scene felt a little bit confusing because even at the dance, she's like, oh, I don't know. Well, we can't because, you know. And so, like, this sort of felt out of place with her being so brazen.
I think because she really likes how brazen Tony is, but she can't let Tony know that.
Yeah.
So she'll, like, allow certain things, but can't allow all things, though she very badly wants to.
Mm-hmm.
Featherhead and Dr. Worthers. Why did I want to call Dr. Worthers? Anyway. Featherhead and Dr. Worthers call Ethel into the office for drawing during class. They say her content is disturbing and she's breaking school rules. She explains she's trying to get a job at Pep Comics, but they give her a week's detention. Girls can't draw things.
If I was her, I'd be like, great, I'll just draw in detention.
That's exactly... When I got detention, that's what I did.
Yeah, I mean, I guess she has to, like, be there during that detention, but I literally was like, oh, that's fine, because now I just have more free time where I'm not drawing at my horrible house with my horrible parents who are also not gonna like this.
Exactly.
Oh, Blanche said that it is a zombie story, obviously, and she wonders if they're writing Afterlife with Archie, and so she's gonna talk about that later, but, like, I know that Blanche has read a lot of Archie comics and has read a lot of the, like, supernatural ones, so I'm definitely interested in hearing what her thoughts are on Afterlife with Archie, which is literally an Archie zombie story.
Ooh.
And the only other thing that I had about this scene was that they talk about Dr. Doily, so I guess Dilton's dad is the teacher.
I definitely feel like this is leading to Jughead being the author of the Archie comics, right?
I think so too, and I have a theory later about what happens with Ethel at the end of the episode regarding that.
Okay. Archie apologizes to Ronnie for leaving last night, and she says that it's okay and she had a good time. He asked her to the dance again, but she says that she's going alone. Frustrated, Archie calls her out on messing with him all week, and she admits it was all a game to her. Maybe Mary's word stuck with her, and she just decided to stay away.
Yeah, this is sad for Archie.
It's sad for Archie, but I'm also, like, glad that Veronica's like, oh, I need to completely change who I am as a person because that's not working for me.
Yeah, I guess it, like, works for Archie because now he's just like, okay, I'm not really into you as much anymore, I guess. Who knows if he still is. Did we see Archie and Veronica kissing in the trailer? I don't think we did. I don't know. Either way.
I don't remember.
I like that Veronica going alone was sort of like foreshadowing from last episode when she decided to walk home instead of get a ride from Archie or Julian. She decided to walk home, and so that sort of felt like foreshadowing now that she's decided to go alone to the dance.
Yeah, she definitely needs to learn how to be her own person outside of her parents and outside of relationships, which, like, has always been Veronica's struggle.
Yeah.
So I'm glad to see that.
Mm-hmm.
Veronica tells Betty she's going to the dance alone and that she deserves to. Betty asks if she got the poem Archie wrote for her, and she says no, and Archie is just going to the dance alone too.
Yeah. Blanche was like, hello, Veronica, go to the dance together. And I'm like, I agree. I've been saying it.
I completely agree. Betty, under no circumstances should you go with Kevin.
Yeah, exactly. But, so Betty, don't go with Kevin, okay? Don't do it.
It's too late.
I love that Veronica has, like, the classic comics Veronica bangs. And I also noticed she's wearing purple a lot this episode. I don't remember if she wore purple a lot last episode either. But, like, I feel like purple is a very Veronica color. And I know that, like, Betty had that classic ponytail in the original story. So they're sort of trying to change it. But I'm like, if we have the classic Veronica bangs, thinks, we need the ponytail back for it to be classic Betty, you know?
That's true.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like Lily's head just hurts way too much from carrying that ponytail for so many years.
Which is so fair.
Yeah. Betty is about to ask Archie to the dance when gay Kevin interrupts her dramatic moment with a literal Rutgers scratch. He pulls her in.
Killed me inside. I knew it was coming and it still killed me inside.
I'm so sad because, like, we're about to collect Archie crumbs.
I know.
Betty knows what she wants. It's not Kevin. Yeah. She's settling for Kevin because it's safe.
And I, like, literally, I was watching it and I, like, you know what? It was great television and they did a good job because, like, I was watching it in slow motion as I was, like, feeling all words, like, come on, come on, come on, come on, come on. Ah, damn it. Just like they want you to feel, you know? Yep. And I was like, damn it. By the time you get back, Veronica will have seen the poem and, like, snatched him up. And I'm glad that that didn't happen. I'm glad that Archie sort of, like, swerved her at the dance, which I loved, which I thought was very funny. But, yeah.
We have to. It was well done. Apparently, we have to put up with this for even longer.
A little bit longer, yeah.
I'm tired of this already, and I don't want to see Kevin and Betty dating each other anymore.
Me neither.
Thank you. I'm sick of it. It's gross.
Yeah.
He pulls her to the music room and apologizes, asks her to go steady, and then gives her the pin that Alice gave him. He tells her he loves her and that he wants to go to the dance together. No.
Oh, man. It's so disingenuous, honestly. Like, Casey does a really good job towing the line between, like, Betty being able to, like, believe that he feels that way, but also, like, we can see that there's a, like, desperation underneath it where he just needs her to continue being his beard. I just wish that he would be honest with her about it so that she didn't have expectations.
I agree. It's hurting everyone, and it's not a storyline that I enjoy at all because I have seen enough storylines in my lifetime of closeted characters hurting other people because they're closeted.
Yeah, right.
You know, like it makes them out to be the villain, especially like in this episode, and I'm tired of it.
Yeah. I thought Kevin was like, I love you, I guess, and I'll put this pin on, but it's near your boob, so I'm uncomfortable and I don't really know what to do. And she's like, I'll just do it. You know?
This poor girl.
He's like, it's where your name embroidery should go. I hope I'm talking to the right person.
Stop.
Are you Betty? I don't know. I don't know much about, like, pinning people and, like, all the going steady stuff, but I wonder, like, if you're wearing somebody's jacket, sometimes their name is embroidered on it, and so you can tell whose jacket it is, but I wonder, yeah, like, how anyone knows whose pin it is, or do you just know who's with who? I don't know.
I think you just know who's with who. You know okay. The couples.
Honestly, it would be nice. It would be nice to bring that back, not, like, to show, like, ownership over people, you know, in that way. But I also, like, I just want to know the drama. Like, as a bystander, I want to know who's with who. I want to know.
Fair enough.
I want to have the information.
I want the information easily labeled.
Exactly. I want the drama.
Yeah. Dr. Werthers tells Featherhead that Ethel didn't show up to detention and that they should speak to her parents. Ethel, meanwhile, is with Jughead turning in her art to Fieldstone. He thinks she's super talented, but is in disbelief that a girl could draw like this because women can't do anything.
Whoa!
But he hires her anyway and asks if she and Jughead are a couple. Jughead says no, and Ethel tells him they are going to the dance together, though.
I love it. It's so funny because Jughead doesn't even, like, he's not even, like, confused about the fact that people keep asking him about it. He's not even like, no, oh my gosh, stop asking, or like, no, we're not. Like, he literally was just like, no. Like, he's just answering the question.
Yeah, he's just like, oh.
He's the best.
No, that's just not really something that I want. Thank you.
It's also so funny. The guy's like, so what are you guys? Boyfriend, girlfriend? And I'm like, first of all, none of your business. Me, who literally just said I want people to wear pins so that I can know what their business is.
How does it feel to be a hypocrite?
You know what? It's okay. Okay. Not too bad. But I'm also like, is there any other way for a full adult person to say that? Are you guys boyfriend, girlfriend? That just feels so juvenile. That made me laugh.
Yeah, I guess you can't. There really is no other way to ask. Well, I guess you, like, are you guys dating?
Are you going steady? Yeah.
Oh, going steady would have been cute.
Right? I don't know. But I think it's so funny. Jughead looks like so confused. And it really feels like they're maybe actually gonna do Ace Jughead. I swear, you guys, I will cry my eyes out. I will be so happy. It's gonna be beautiful.
Please don't get clowned.
I hope to not get clowned, but honestly, like, these little crumbs are, like, they're not enough. I don't want to say that they're enough, because I want more, but they feel like something special, and I have fuzzy feelings about it.
Good.
Also, this, what's his freaking name? Fieldstone?
Mm-hmm.
He starts calling Ethel Freckles. Even after he asks for her what her name is, he keeps calling her Freckles. I have a trauma response to the nickname Freckles in regards to Lost, so can we not do that?
I think it's too late, my friend.
Can we not do that, please?
It's too late.
No, we're not doing that. So stop doing that. Thanks.
All right. Smithers knocks on Ronnie's door to give her the poem that Archie threw in the trash. Look, Smithers is back.
I knew it.
You've been knowing it.
I knew it.
Yep.
I knew that Smithers was here. The thing that I love the most about this scene is that Ronnie opens the door and she says, I'm about to put my face on. And she has a full face of makeup already on. And I think that was hilarious.
She's just like me.
And she just says it so straight-faced. It's great. It's good stuff.
Ethel gets thrown to her parents yelling at her for her behavior lately. She yells back at them and says she's going to the dance and closes herself in her bedroom.
Yeah, hard to watch. Hard to watch. Upsetting, for sure. I feel like that's the same lady who played her mom in, like, the previous seasons, I think.
I think it is, too.
And there was, like, there was something about, like, Ethel's dad, I think, almost died because of, like, something that Hiram did, I think. And then Veronica, like, Ethel's mom, like, got mad at Veronica or something. So it, like, makes sense to me that her mom is, like, a yeller because I think we've had that before.
I think so, too. I remember something about that.
Yeah, and they're, like, at the hospital and Veronica, like, apologizes for her parents or something like that. I can't remember. But, yeah, hard to watch. Definitely upsetting. And Ethel, I'm sorry. And I like that she's getting to be a little bit more rounded in this season.
Yeah, it's a fun exploration and it gives Shannon Purse something to do.
Yeah, and even, in the 100th episode where, like, Ethel somehow, for some reason, is, like, the other all-knowing being other than Jughead. Head and, like, maybe Dilton, like, even then she was just sort of like, I don't know, I just know stuff. So it's nice that they're okay. Like that she's getting something to do.
Agreed.
Yeah. And, like, I know that we've complained about Ethel a lot in the past, which is, and I'm happy to like her. I wanted to like her, but she was annoying, and now I'm happy to like her.
Well, she was only annoying because they kept writing her to be a deeply unhinged and unstable character. Yeah. But yeah. In a way that was somehow, like, not entertaining, which was very strange.
Yeah, yeah, you're completely right, yeah.
Clay tells Kevin that he wishes he could have seen him perform. Kev explains that they switched him out for Fangs. Clay basically says that Fangs is hot and that Kevin is too, and maybe he could give Clay a private concert sometime. This is bold. Kevin excuses himself to go find Betty, and you can tell by Clay's face that he knows that he may have just messed up.
Yeah, like, dude is dropping hints, and it is bold.
I'm like, should you really be this forward in the 50s?
Yeah, exactly. Also, Kevin, like, literally got, like, bumped out of performing. And so I'd be like, I don't know if I would show up if I was Kevin. Like, he has to because his girlfriend is here, I guess. But, like, I'd kind of be embarrassed. I don't know if I would show up if I had been bumped from performing.
I'd be sad.
Yeah, I'd be sad and a little humiliated, so.
Yeah.
But of course he has to be here to flirt with his husband.
Oh, yeah, duh. Come on.
Yeah.
Like, are we going to take Clay back to the future at some point?
I hope so. I like him.
Because these two are connecting, are they going to retain their memories or do we have to start over again?
I wonder if they will retain their memories. I hope they do, because otherwise what's the point of this?
I think the point is to indulge the writer's need to just reset the show.
Yeah. 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 I hope they do. I hope they remember what happens.
I hope they do too.
I think it's beautiful because then, like, as much as we like Tony and Fangs, I wonder if Tony will be like, oh my gosh, I was always supposed to be in love with Cheryl. And, like, maybe Archie and Betty will, like, fall even more in love because they found each other again in this other timeline. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
I just think that would be lovely. I hope they remember.
Because that is, like, some romance stuff right there. Falling each other in multiple universes and timelines.
Yeah.
Come on now.
It's fan fiction stuff.
Exactly. Fangs and his band start performing Tutti Frutti by Elvis, and everyone is having a great time, especially Midge, who shares a tiny moment with him.
Aw.
And then Blanche says, had to point this out even though we saw it for a shot. Jughead is, of course, mainly interested in the food and has a full plate.
I love you, food, Jughead. I love you, buddy. Like, I know that, like, the food stuff isn't, like, the, isn't asexual Jughead, but it is comics Jughead, which gives me hope.
It's something.
I love you, food, Jughead.
Tony asks Cheryl to dance with her. Cheryl declines at first, but agrees, and then they hold hands on their way to the dance floor. Unfortunately, Featherhead is lurking and sees them.
He, like, immediately is like, no gays. I hate it.
I'm like, great, so now we just gotta watch a whole bunch of homophobia.
Mm. Well, I hate you.
Love this. This is a great thing for the queer community to watch at this point in human history.
Yeah.
Thank you so much, Riverdale.
Thanks for reminding us of what it was like.
In 2023. Time. Nailed it. Ronnie tells Archie that she got his poem and she thought it was beautiful. She asks him to dance, but he declines in favor of sharing a dance with Mary. Ronnie dances with Julian instead.
Yeah. This is, like, Blanche said this is the cutest moment in the whole episode. I completely agree, and I actually laughed out loud at him rejecting her for his mom. It's like, so sweet, though. Like, and it's a great moment someone because you think that it might be Betty, but then it's not.
I also really love that, like,
and it's just great.
Veronica has to be on this journey of, like, fixing herself.
Yeah, self-reflection, and yeah. I don't love that she dances with Julian, though.
But, like, it kind of sucks because, like, Veronica is always the one who is being forced to be better. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, oh my god, but what if she just had something nice for once?
Do we see her take Julian's hand, or does he just offer it? I can't remember.
I can't remember either.
I kind of hope that she doesn't dance with him.
I also hope that.
But if she does, then I don't know.
I question her standards.
Yeah.
Tony is drinking on the bleachers looking across the gym at Cheryl, along with Clay, who is sadly looking at Kevin dance with Betty. Oh, these poor gay people.
Yeah. It was really funny to see Tony with, like, the booze in the paper bag, though. That was very funny and very Tony. I loved that.
I'm really loving Tony being back in her Serpents era.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah.
Featherhead approaches Cheryl to say how nice the dance is, and that boys and girls dancing in harmony is just as God intended. And wouldn't she agree?
Not God!
Obviously, she says yes, but longingly glances at Tony after he leaves. Oh my God!
Dude, I out loud, when he said just as God intended, I was like, not God!
Right?
No!
Like, you kind of forget how deeply entrenched, like, yeah, the church was in school.
Religion, yeah.
And then I'm like, oh, wait, no, that's just now, too.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, Blanche noted that her mouth literally fell open after he said that, and that the scene made her so uncomfortable. And I completely agree, and that was the point of the scene, but I still didn't like it. I didn't have fun.
Yeah, I don't want to see it, but not because I don't want to learn from it, but because it so strikingly reflects reality right now to a point where I'm like, oh, God.
Yeah. Not God!
We really are going through it again. Oh, all right, fair enough. Everything is seeming to calm down for the night when Ethel barges into the gym covered in blood. Jughead puts down his snacks and rushes over to her, and Ethel collapses in his arms, sobbing that something terrible has happened. Finally, some good food.
That's how you know Jughead cares. Jughead cares about her as a friend, and then so much that he puts down his snacks, which is really good. I genuinely thought that the Ethel thing that we saw, like, this thing that we saw in the trailer would happen in, like, straight up the middle of an episode. Like, I did not expect it to be a cliffhanger for some reason.
Well, yeah, because why would they put it in a trailer?
Right. Yeah, because, like, I already saw it, but I guess I am wondering what happens, obviously. I originally thought that it was, like, a Black Hood thing, because you remember in season 2 that, like, the Black Hood killed a bunch of students, like, while other people were at, like, the medieval dance or whatever, like, the Renaissance dance that they did?
Yeah.
So that kind of reminded me of that, because it was at a dance that happened, right?
Yeah.
So I also thought it was funny that, like, Jughead, like, immediately sort of falls down with her because he has slippy socks on and he can't keep either of them up.
Oh, right, they're all in their socks!
He's just in his little slippy little socks. He's got these little red socks on. Originally, I was like, is she dead or did she hurt somebody?
I think she hurt somebody.
Yeah, because it doesn't look like she's actually hurt. Like, we don't see a wound or anything. She's just covered in blood.
Yeah.
Like, and also clearly she had changed to come to the dance. Like, she's in a dress to come to the dance.
Yeah, she wanted to go to the dance with Jughead. Like, she was gonna do it no matter what.
I'm just like, how could the trailer be all about sex when this happened?
They're like, we don't want to spoil anything that happens. And I'm like, but I, like, need a hint.
Yeah, like, tell me what's going on. So here's what Blanche thought about this. She said, I thought this scene was very reminiscent of one of the opening scenes in Afterlife with Archie, where Jughead shows up to a school dance covered in blood, only it's because he's a zombie having just killed his parents. My interpretation was that Ethel had killed her parents because that's where we last saw her. It's an extremely upsetting read that I could not finish after that scene, but Rass did write it. Something else that ties this all together was the fact that they were writing the zombie comic together. I'd be way more okay with them doing the zombie thing this way because I don't like Ethel or her family, is what Blanche said. I think it could be a fun supernatural thing to throw in as long as the Joneses are safe. I agree, and so after that, I was like, if she killed her parents and they become zombies, are Jughead's writing starting to come true?
I want them to become zombies because then finally something interesting would be happening.
Like, something, like, we had supernatural last season. I'm like, are we bringing in more supernatural things? I don't know. I'm interested. What do you think is going on?
I don't have high expectations for Riverdale doing things that are fun.
Yeah.
Because so far the season has not been, like, overly fun. So I'm just gonna say it's a straight up normal murder.
All right. I mean, we'll see.
It's Riverdale, so, like, murder's interesting, too.
I mean, it's true. Well, let's go into segments. Our first segment is, what did Blanche think? And she sent us a little voicemail. And here it is.
Hey. Hey, Riverdalians. It's Blanche. I'm a 22-year-old pet caretaker from Massachusetts, and media consumption is my only hobby. Not too much to say this week, because, to be honest, I didn't love this episode, but I thought I'd send in a voice memo just to talk about what I did enjoy about it, which was surprisingly Shoni and Barchi. And I say it's surprising because I don't really ship things when I get into TV. I usually don't care about that kind of thing. But I just thought the scenes between these two couples were so sweet. There's something so soft and romantic about the concept of meeting your soulmate in another life and getting to fall in love all over again. Anyways, I know it's shorter than last time, but that was my overall big thought that I thought was worth sharing. So there you have it. Thanks again to Robin and Brittany for having me this season. I love having an outlet to share my thoughts about Riverdale because it really is just my favorite thing in the world, other than my dog. And I'm just having so much fun writing about it. Okay, love you, bye!
Also, you guys, after we recorded, we got 3 amazing comments on SoundCloud from Dutch Renegade, and you guys need to hear them, especially you, Blanche. Okay, so this is what Dutch Renegade said. Okay, so this was interesting to me. This is about the dog. Because I could have sworn I had seen this dog before. What I could find is sadly not a specific breed, but if you are interested, the Hallmark movie Cherished Memories, A Gift to Remember 2 has a dog named Bailey that looks very similar, as well as the dog P.U.P. from Puppy Star Christmas is very similar looking. They are described as maybe being Golden Retriever / Terrier mixes, but sadly no specific breed could be found at this point. However, if someone does know the breed, I would also like to know, and please let a girl know if this canine actor has appeared in something else, because I swear I've seen him before. So if anybody knows more things about the dog that plays Hot Dog, please let us know. Dutch Renegade also said, I might have missed you guys talking about this, but where is Polly? Does she not exist in this universe either? Seems like an odd collection of characters to not be around. I completely agree. We did not talk about Polly, but like, that's what I'm saying. Like, Polly... Oh my gosh, you're totally right. Polly is such a weird person to not have, especially when we're having dinners with Alice and Hal. You're totally right. It does seem like Tierra is like pretty booked and busy though, so like, I guess I get it, but I don't know. I definitely agree that some of the characters that are here are like such a weird, like weird choices to not have some characters and like not certain characters, if that made sense. And then the last comment that Dutch Renegade said was, I'm with you that I will be sad if we don't get at least 2 episodes back to the characters I've spent 6 to 7 years getting to know. One can't truly love Riverdale unless you accept it for what it is, which I have spent 6 years doing. So I hope we get that in the final episodes. Otherwise, it won't feel like a true goodbye to these characters. You completely understand me. You get me. You understand me. And I completely agree. And yeah. Anyway. Love you guys. My segment is which character needs a hug the most? Out of character, but I'm gonna give my hug to Ethel.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
I'm gonna give my hug to Ethel.
Also, thank you, Blanche, for sending in your thoughts and for everything that you do here.
Yeah, you're the best. I love you.
My segment is which MILF was the most badass. Mary.
Yeah, 100%. Absolutely.
Thank you. I've spoken. Yeah.
What is Sam shipping the most? Sam says that she is shipping Shoni and Barchi, and that's Taze.
She's love right it. For that. I'm shipping Alice hating Hal.
My next segment is asexual Jughead? ? Happy to bring this one back. And I can confirm, yeah. Hell yeah.
Yeah.
Super ace this episode. Crazy.
There are no question marks.
Yeah. No question marks. Just really, really ace this episode, which I was just absolutely thrilled about. Now it's time for our best line award. My best line award goes to Ethel and Jughead for...
So, Jughead, the sock hop's tomorrow night.
It is?
What if we went together?
Like, for kicks?
Yeah. Yeah, just for kicks.
Might be fun. Could have a decent spread. Cookies and whatnot.
I'm gonna start saying cookies and whatnot now.
Cookies and whatnot. Okay, you can.
Cookies and whatnot. Yeah.
And mine goes to Veronica for...
Smithers, I'm about to put my face on.
It's already on. It's already on, babe. It's
already on, man, but a different one? Okay.
Yeah.
And Blanche's line also goes to Veronica for...
So then I said, sorry, Mr. Sinatra, but I think Elvis sang it better.
I love the, like, classic, here's the punchline, everyone laughs, but no one heard the setup, so it's not funny. I love those.
Me too. I think it's so funny and cute.
Always. All right, as for the trailer, oh boy, looks like one of my least favorite episodes of Riverdale, The Birds and the Bees. After a lesson in sex education leaves the gang more confused than ever, Veronica decides to organize a makeout party at the Pembroke. Elsewhere, Jughead attempts to help Ethel.
Hey, why?
Out of some trouble, only to find himself in hot water as well. We do see Jughead.
Well, sounds like Ethel killed her parents.
Yeah, that's what I think so. But I'm like, how can you help her out of that though? Like,
well, what if she's like.
And also, like, she ran into the dance with a million witnesses covered in blood. So, like,
it's gonna be hard to prove that she didn't do it.
Exactly. I do like that, like, we only see Jughead, like, kissing Betty that one time in the trailer, and that's it. And, but in the thing, it says elsewhere Jughead does this. So I'm like, he shows up to the party and leaves? I don't know, but I love this for Jughead that he's like, yeah, I'm not staying for this weird, this weird trip you guys are going on.
Weird it up, guys.
Love it. So happy. So Veronica tells the group that she's gonna host a makeout party. And yeah, I super would not have shown up to that. But she does say that you're all coming. And I'm like, you can't make me. I'm not coming. No.
In a post-COVID world, couldn't be me.
Yeah, exactly. So they're gonna like play some sort of spin the bottle, I assume. We see Bughead kissing. Please free them. Please free them.
It is very similar to like the party from season one, though.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. And then we see Tony, I think, flipping her hair. We saw that in the trailer. We see Betty and Kevin making out. Oh boy. Pass. And we see Betty says pretty sexy to Kev with her little lollipop. And then we see Kevin and Clay making out. Better. My guess is that this is just like a series of fantasies from the perspective of each character.
Yeah.
And like, so Kevin's fantasy is him kissing Clay. And then we see that weird Archie one that's about to come up. And that's Betty, because we see Betty kissing Archie in that one. And then Cheryl and Tony making out soon too. And so I feel like that's Cheryl's.
For sure.
So that's my guess. And in the original trailer, we saw Veronica making out with Julian. So maybe that's Julian's?
Oh, that would make sense.
Do you remember in the early episodes when, like, they went and, like, Reggie gave a bunch of the... No, maybe it was Nick St. Clair. Gave them, like, a bunch of drugs. Yeah, that was in season two. And then Betty, like, didn't take them and then yelled at Veronica about the black hood and then left.
Right.
I wonder if they, like, do drugs and then this is where the fantasies come from or something.
Where are they gonna get drugs in the 50s?
I don't know. But I hope it's called Jingle Jangle.
Amazing.
My hope is that if Jughead does show up to this party, which, like, it seems like he does because he kisses Betty in the trailer. I just can't wait for this fantasy to be Jughead just eating cheeseburgers. Like, nothing would make me happier than, like, everybody else making out in their fantasies and Jughead just eating cheeseburgers. That would make me so, so happy. It is a true hope that I have, but I also think that he's gonna show up, kiss Betty, and then leave because he has to go help Ethel with stuff, so who knows?
We will find out.
And then Veronica says, if we truly want to learn about SEX, you have to start doing it. And I'm like, are we spelling it out because we're at school?
And also, just by the way, these are all supposed to be teenage characters, and this
still
is
teenagers again.
Just so we're clear, this is kind of weird.
That's why I don't like it.
These are supposed to be underage characters that they are now making an orgy episode about, and that's creepy. Right.
And then we see Archie in a chair in his undies in a, like, a jungle, and Betty pounces upon him like a jungle cat, and I'm like, okay, this was definitely a choice that you made for an episode.
At least the set's pretty.
Yeah, looks cool.
Yeah, definitely looks cool.
Nice, like, black box. Okay, well, you know what? I can't wait because I am going to get to watch it in person with my friends, Benny and Sam. And I'm really excited about that, to get to watch this episode with you guys.
Yeah, as if it wasn't weird enough.
Honestly,
we get to make fun of it together.
I'm thrilled, because otherwise I was gonna have to sit in my basement and watch it by myself, and that would feel weirder. So I'm happy to get to watch it with you guys in person.
Fair enough, yeah.
All right, guys, thank you so much for listening to this episode.
Our music is Terminal by Good News Tunes.
And thank you to those who shared space with us while we recorded this podcast. For me, it was my dog. Thanks, Dilly.
For me, it was my wife and our roommate / friend, Emily.
Yay.
Thank you to Sheila Daly, aka Blanche, for writing our notes and being an absolute angel.
You are a goddess.
Truly.
If you're a fan of The 100, we'd like to talk about that show too. We did seasons 4-7 as they were airing, and now we're going back and doing the good old days. We're on a hiatus for Riverdale right now, but we did season 3, and we're in the middle of season 2 right now.
If you're a fan of Stranger Things, we like to talk about that show too. We are in the middle of our season 4 podcast.
Yay! If you're a fan of Lost, we like to talk about that show too. We are also in season 4 of Lost. That is our longest, most big brain podcast, and we have a spoiler section at the end if you want to watch along for the first time. And we also have guests over there, so that podcast is my baby, so I hope that you go and check it out. It would mean a lot to me.
Yeah, if you want to watch genuinely good television, watch Lost.
Yeah.
You can follow the Aficionados on Twitter, Tumblr, Instagram, and our new TikTok.
I made a TikTok!
It's cute as hell.
Go follow it, please. Thanks. Like I said earlier, our Patreon is patreon.com/theafficionados. If you like what we do here, please consider donating, because it's expensive with our money and it's also expensive with our time, and we want to please help us also get to pay Blanche, because of course we are doing that and we'd really appreciate your help. If you can't do that, check out our small businesses in the description, or just recommend us to a friend, because that's free and we have a whole bunch of podcasts for you to recommend. Thank you.
You can follow me on Twitter at @Britannia, which is Britannia with an underscore at the end.
And you can follow me personally at Robin E. Jeffrey. That's RobynEJefferey pretty much everywhere. Our next episode is episode 703. It's called Sex Education, which is a British comedy drama streaming television series. It follows the lives of students, staff, and parents of the fictional Moordale Secondary School as they contend with various personal dilemmas, often related to sexual intimacy. And Gillian Anderson is in it.
I was just about to say, Gillian Anderson, as always, for my entire life, I am free on Thursday.
I did want to say that I have seen clips of this show where there is an asexual character and they talk about asexuality, so I'm just saying that Sex Education can be about all the things in the trailer, but it can also be about Jughead learning these things, I'm just saying.
And it can also be about me hitting on Gillian Anderson.
It can also be about Brittany hitting on Gillian Anderson.
We can be well-rounded.
All right, guys, talk to you next week. Okay, love you, bye.
Okay, love you, bye.